This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. March 16th, 2017. This is Dr. Everett Piper of Oklahoma Wesleyan University sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon on Washington Watch. Little housekeeping before we get going. I always like to do that because I do want to encourage your call-in. So remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234. Remember that if you want to follow Tony Perkins on Twitter, it's T Perkins. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T. Again, this is Washington Watch, and I'm Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, filling in for Tony this afternoon, who's taking a break. We're basically going to take two different directions this afternoon with regard to our discussion. In the first segment, I'm going to deal with the furtherance of the discussion that we had yesterday with regard to the Snowflake Rebellion, the student protests that are taking place across our country on the various different campuses and universities. I am going to speak to the issue of education. I'm going to suggest what's wrong and what we should be doing about it. As we turn the corner after the first break, at the quarter hour, we're going to invite a guest. Corey Taylor is from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Corey is an African-American leader, and he's going to join me to discuss why the African-American community is so closely connected with the Democratic Party. Corey is a conservative commentator. He also is the host of a PBS public broadcasting station show called Up Close out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's broadcasted through OETA, which is Oklahoma Education Television. Corey will stay with us at the bottom of the hour. We'll further that conversation, and then Corey has agreed to stay on into the final 15 minutes so we can do some Q&A. So again, the call-in number is 866-372-7234. Definitely want to have dialogue today. Southern Illinois University announced that they were having a nap-in, that they were promoting naps for their students to come to the Morris Library on their campus to, quote-unquote, bring their sleeping bags and their blankies and have dreams of diversity as they took a nap. I'm not making this up. One of the other planned events was to navigate a maze so that the students could walk the general path of diversity, similar to the maze that you may have played in when you were a child, when your parents took you to a Harvest Day festival or a pumpkin festival or a Halloween festival, where there might have been a maze mowed in the field or in the cornfield for you to play in. Again, hearkening back to our childhood, we are meeting together in libraries today at the universities for naps and to play in mazes. An Iowa high school this past week forced its students to apologize for wearing red, white, and blue clothing to a basketball game. The reason for that is it was deemed offensive to the rival school's players. A Tulsa high school blocked students from bringing flags to a football game this past fall. American flags were banned. Carleton University, a university in Canada, catch this one, decided to remove the scales from the gymnasium and from the various different workout rooms and weight rooms because those scales were deemed to be triggering events for their students. The list goes on and on. We've talked about Brown University and the fact that they have a counseling center with Play-Doh and bubbles and coloring books and videos of quote-unquote frolicking puppies to help the students deal with the crisis and the anxiety they feel with regard to the recent presidential election. We see campuses across the land from Berkeley to Middlebury protesting violently because they don't like a speaker that comes to their campus, and it's always a speaker that is labeled to be conservative as opposed to liberal. Students don't like the ideas, so they therefore protest those ideas to the point of violence. As we were talking yesterday at Middlebury, because Charles Murray was invited, the professor who hosted him actually had her hair pulled by the student protesters to the point where her neck was wrenched. Professor Murray was in the car trying to drive away from the mob, and they actually surrounded his car and started jumping on it and rocking it back and forth so that he could not leave. All the while, these students are demanding safe spaces, and the rhetorical question is, how safe do you think the host professor and Dr. Murray felt in the face of these protests? What in the world is going on? I have a book coming out in August. It's titled Not a Daycare, Why a Coddled Nation is a Crippled Nation. And it plays off of the viral op-ed that we've discussed on the show before that I wrote some year and a half ago, where I confronted the Snowflake Rebellion and I said, this is a university, it's not a daycare. We're here to confront your character, not coddle you in your sins and your selfishness and your narcissism. The university isn't supposed to be safe, it's supposed to be good. Like C.S. Lewis tells us, the great lion Aslan is not safe, but he is good. And the great lion of the liberal arts, likewise, the great lion of the academy, the great lion of the university is not supposed to be safe, but it is supposed to be good. I'm going to read to you a little bit out of chapter 13 of my upcoming book. And this particular chapter is titled A Cultural Aversion to Adversity. Frankly, it's the story of two things. It's the story of Solomon and cutting the baby in half. And it's the story of C.S. Lewis's silver chair, Puddleglum, and the evil witch. A puzzling case was brought before the king. Two women presented their problem to Solomon, known as the wisest judge on earth. There was plenty of finger-pointing and anger and tearful accusations. At dispute was a baby. Both women claimed to be the mother. Both pleaded desperately for the baby. Both claimed the other was lying. Solomon's simple solution was, at the same time, both shocking and bold. He ordered the bodyguard, his bodyguard, to cut the baby in half and give half to each woman. Upon hearing the king's judgment, the real mother cried out, "Don't kill him. Give him to the other woman." Her instinctive behavior and reaction revealed the truth, for no other woman would let her son be cut in two and thereby killing her own child. No mother would do that. I think of this story often as I look at the present state of today's academy, of our universities within the contemporary culture. There was a time not long ago when it was assumed that an educated person was one that understood the interconnectedness of all aspects of our existence. One discipline was informed by the other. Religion and science were interrelated. The humanities were built upon philosophy and vice versa. Economics informed ethics, and ethics informed economics. This was a time when victimization and vice and self-centeredness and division played no role in education. Instead, there was harmony between music and math. Faith and learning were intertwined. The university stood for unity. Professors and preachers and politicians all knew that a healthy culture was one built upon an integrated body of knowledge, not a segregated collection of disaffected opinions. Truth stood the test of time and withstood the corruption of power. It was self-evident that we can't separate facts from our beliefs, and beliefs from our behaviors, for both presuppose the other. Today, however, our postmodern universities seem adrift in the self-refuting and disconnected claims that fly in the face of this logic. Tolerance is championed by faculty who won't tolerate those they judge to be intolerant. Diversity is claimed as the highest good by students who openly detest those with whom they disagree. Academic freedom is demanded by the same people who employ political correctness to restrict public prayer. The same sort of academicians that railed against government intrusion during the Scopes Monkey trial now lobby for a government-imposed curriculum that prohibits the open exchange of ideas concerning Darwinism and intelligent design. Many scholars now declare that one's personal life is off limits when assessing a person's fitness for public service. The content of a man's character is no longer as important as the color of his skin or his physical characteristics and political loyalties. Is it possible that in the story of Solomon we find a timely and poignant lesson for today? The question is this: are we more like the woman who was willing to let the king cut the baby in half than we are like the one who cried out to save her child? As we see postmodern fallacies sawing our culture asunder, separating public policy from personal piety, are we willing to let the king cut the baby in half, or do we plead for him to save the child even if it hurts us to do so? as we see our schools and our churches and our campuses constructing false dichotomies that sever our children's personal beliefs from their public behavior, their facts from their faith, their heads from their heart, do we tacitly let the king carry out his gruesome work, or do we cry out? When we see the consequences of broken ideas paraded before us on the evening news like Columbine-like vignettes, do we cry out, "No, I won't let you continue to cut the soul out of my son and out of my daughter. He needs morality to be a man, and she needs piety to have purpose. Take your sword away and let my child live." Solomon knew a living thing could not be cut in half and expected to survive. C.S. Lewis's words of a half century ago call us to heed the same lessons of this wisest man in history. Here's what Lewis said. "We have made such a tragic comedy of the situation. We continue to clamor for those very qualities we are rendering impossible. You can hardly open a periodical without coming across the statement that what our civilization needs is more self-sacrifice and honesty and ethics. In a sort of ghastly simplicity, we have removed the organ while we continue to demand the function. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful." Unquote. Scripture tells us faith without works is dead, and perhaps the lesson of Solomon is that a culture emasculated of its character is dead too. There's another story, and it's told by C.S. Lewis. It's the story of Puddleglum and the Narnian children as they seek to rescue Prince Rillian from the witch's dark, dank cavern. As they go about their work, trying to find Prince Rillian, they find him in a dark underground cave, tied to a silver chair that has mysterious powers over him. He has been brainwashed to believe that the witch is his ally, not his captor, and that darkness is light, and that his bondage is freedom. The kids and Puddleglum untie the prince, hoping to escape the confines of the cave before the witch returns. But alas, they are too late. The witch does return and captures them. And before they can flee the darkness of the underworld and return to the warm, sun-drenched lands of Narnia, the witch confronts them. Basically, she says this: "Why do you want to return to the overworld? Why do you want to go back to this place that you call warm and inviting, where you say that there's a sun and you claim that there's a lion named Aslan?" She doesn't resort to force to keep the kids and Puddleglum captive. She just resorts to words and quote-unquote education, if you will. "What is the sun you speak of?" says the witch. "Do you mean anything by the word? Can you tell me what it is like?" Well, as the kids tell her, it's like a lamp, if you will. It's round and yellow and gives light to the whole room. "It hangeth over the roof." The witch responds and says, "No, that's an illusion. That's not true. It's the cave that's real. It's not the real world." The moral of this story is the lies of education can cause total corruption and bondage for culture. We need to recognize that suns and lions are real, and they're not make-believe cats, and they're not simply lights in a dark cavern. This is Dr. Everett Piper, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We're going to take a commercial break, and when I come back, we're going to have Corey Taylor join us to talk about the African-American community and why, perhaps it's education, they're so enamored with the Democratic Party. Be right back after this.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters. Hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi. All throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's 22 after the hour. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'm going to give a very brief introduction here because I want to give Corey all the time necessary to talk, and he is going to stay with us for the next three segments. Corey Taylor is a conservative commentator and host of a public broadcasting show titled Up Close. It's broadcast out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I met Corey recently while I was speaking at a political event, a Republican event down in Tulsa. The two of us struck a chord immediately. He invited me on his program, and I'm returning the favor because you all need to get to know Corey very well. Corey, welcome to Washington Watch this afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Piper. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Delighted to have you. Thanks for taking the time to join us here.
My pleasure.
Let me set this up just a little bit, and then I'm going to ask you a couple questions and let you run. In 2008, 95% of the black population voted for Barack Obama. In 2012, I understand that it was 93%. Now, as I understand it, that is unusual, considering that 47% of the blacks identify as liberal and 45% as conservatives, but yet 93% vote for the reelection of Barack Obama. Okay. Now, I guess the question that I have, and you've agreed to come on here and help us through this, a lot of people want to ask this question. Sometimes you do feel uncomfortable because you don't want to offend. I'm not worried about that right now because you and I know each other, so I don't think there's any offense in this conversation. So help us with this. Why is there such a huge turnout out of the African-American community for the Democratic Party? Why is there such loyalty?
Well, let me start by saying, first of all, let's go back to his first time being elected. I think it was such a big phenomenon the first time he was being elected. And, of course, President Obama went on at the time, President-elect Obama, he went on to Rick Warren and he said, you know, he was not for abortion. And then he had defined marriage as marriage between males and females. So what I think happened at that point, the first time around, that everybody, even those who are African-Americans who were more conservative, they felt like, okay, this is a historical moment. First African-American. I know a lot of people don't realize this, but in the African-American community, a lot of people didn't go with Barack Obama first. They were all going with Hillary Clinton because, of course, Barack Obama was new to the scene. And so what you had here was Barack Obama coming in as a very polarizing figure, African-Americans wanting to be on the right side of history. And then, of course, he says that I'm not for abortion and I'm not for gay marriage and I'm, you know, marriages between male and female. And so I think a lot of people wanted to be on the right side of history at that time. But then it was shortly after that, during his first tenure, that some that were conservatives started saying, okay, well, this is not really what it's panning out to be. I know that was my case, all right? And so what has happened is that a lot of people have been galvanized, especially in the second run to come around to be president. It was like we saw a lot of stuff that was the nation was being pitted against each other on the whole racial stuff. And I think when people start seeing that happen, I think the voter turnout among African Americans, you know, if you would have watched some of the infomercials and stuff on TV, it was like, we got to do this. We got to get them back in again. We got to get them back in again. Well, people that are like me, that are conservative, we sat back and said, okay, no, that's probably not the way to go. We need to look at a different alternative. Now, that's a setup, but here's the reality. I think a lot of people that are African-Americans have felt disenfranchised from the conservative or the Republican Party, if you view those as being synonymous. And I think they feel disconnected because in my mind, and even hearing my friends, they've always equated the Republican Party or the conservative movement with this group being racist. Now, I know that not to be the truth because I've been conservative ever since I can vote, which was right out of high school. And definitely when I got to college, when I first heard J.C. Watt speak, and then I knew after hearing him speak, because he kind of sounded like a preacher, reminiscent of me growing up, but then he started talking about conservative values, and it was there that I grew that identity that this is where I belong as a believer, as a Christian. And so I think a lot of people get their beliefs, especially in the African-American community, they want to separate. Here's what I believe from my biblical upbringing, you know, what God says or what I believe in the Bible. But when it comes to the political part of me, I need to vote with somebody who I feel like I can identify with and who have my best interests in mind.
Okay,
and
all right.
So that's kind of a little bit of it.
Let me interrupt here. Okay, so you're saying that the black community feels that the Democratic Party has its back and the Republican Party may not. Okay, I'm going to challenge that. Why?
Okay.
From my perspective and the perspective of probably a lot of listeners, the Democratic Party has taken the black community for granted, and it seems to be obvious. Do you agree or do you disagree?
No. I agree 100%. And so, again, let me echo these sentiments. Because, you know, being African-American, I have friends that are Caucasian, African-American, Latino, all walks of life. But when I typically hear the African-American community, that's the thing that they say to me. Now, I'll take you back a little bit. I remember when I first started letting more people know that I was conservative and that I was Republican and that's how I voted, a lot of people started coming up with all of these ideas. Well, that's how you are able to make money and all this. And I was like, what does that have to do with anything, you know, other than the fact that I believe in smaller government, I believe in light, you know, and all of the host of other issues, and I believe marriage is between male and female. And so a lot of times I get flack as being a person who's a Republican. And yes, the Democratic Party has painted a very good picture of getting the African-American community, also other minority groups, to believe that they are for us, when really, honestly, to me,
okay,
when a man...
Corey,
okay,
I'm gonna ask you to hold that thought because we're gonna have to take a commercial break here. Hold your thought there on why you believe there's that loyalty there for the Democratic Party. This is Dr. Everett Piper on Washington Watch, sitting in for Tony Perkins. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll take a commercial break, and Corey will be with us when we return.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, there's a number of things in the economic news that have everybody's attention. Of course, one of the things is CBO's running of the numbers of the RyanCare, everybody's calling it right now, which is kind of odd, but nonetheless, they're running the numbers. President Trump's chief economic advisor said basically that the CBO could look at a blizzard and see a sunny day, basically saying the same thing that we've all been saying. I'm not hanging my hat on anything the CBO says, whether it's a good number or a bad number. In this case, one could take this either way, but there are still two other phases that they really have to look at before they can score this properly, if in fact there is a 2 and 3 phase. I expect, as Speaker Ryan is coming under an awful lot of pressure, this bill as it sits today may not see the light of day. From the very first moment that I read what was in it, I said, I don't like it. I don't think it's a good idea. I'm sticking to that. A lot of other people feeling the same way right now. This is not a total repeal, as was promised. It needs to be. We've got to work and fight for a good deal, but it's got to be one deal. This idea of doing phase 2 and phase 3 is a lunacy, not to mention the fact that it's going to slow the legislative process down dramatically, which is going to slow our chances of getting to tax reform by August, which I believe we desperately need to do.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Okay, this is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon on Washington Watch. With us, as we head into the bottom of the hour, come out of the bottom of the hour, is Corey Taylor, friend of mine from Tulsa, Oklahoma, African-American leader, commentator, host of Up Close, a PBS television show. Corey was talking to us in the last segment about why the African-American community shows more loyalty to the Democratic Party and seems to be somewhat suspicious of the Republican Party. Corey, I'm going to let you wrap that up quickly, and then I want to shift gears to another topic. So what do you want to say in 60 seconds to 2 minutes on a summary of that?
Okay, well, basically what has to happen, I believe, is that the Republican Party, we need to get more information, our conservatives, we need to get more information out there to let people know that it's not about racism, it's about helping people to understand how to be empowered and be self-empowered. And I think that's the message that the Democratic Party tries to bring in, or liberals try to bring in, to make African Americans believe that they are the stronger force that is back, wants to back us, and that the conservatives don't have our back.
Now, Star Parker, friend of both of ours, she has written a book on how the modern-day government largesse is essentially a plantation. It is a form of servitude where the African-American community is being held in bondage to the government now and really doesn't have the freedom that it's earned through the civil rights movement. Do you agree or disagree with Star?
Wow. Ooh, that's a loaded one. If I think about it like this, I think there's a lot of people that agree with that, that would agree with that ideology. But the thing that I would have to look at, I would have to point out, you know, Michael Jordan. I would have to point out Oprah. I would have to point out Bob Johnson. I would even have to point out myself as an African-American who's been an entrepreneur. I would never allow anyone really to try to stop me. And, you know, growing up, I did fall into that it's somebody else's fault. But I think we have to take ownership within ourselves to do what we can. Now, as far as people talking about there's governmental entities that are trying to stop people from being prosperous, you know, honestly, there may have some validity from what people say, but as far as me, I don't research it to that point that I can stand on that point of view. You know, because my elders in church, who pretty much were African-American and Caucasian, they did stuff that said, listen, according to what we're teaching you biblically, a man don't work, don't eat, you got to get up, you got to get out, you got to get your own. And then if you don't know how to make inroads or connect with people, you have to find the best way to connect with people. And when I did that, I was able to prosper and do better in life.
All right. Here's the question. We have about 3 minutes to cover this one before the break.
Okay.
I've spoken about this, and I've flagged you on this, so this won't be a surprise. I want everybody to know.
Right. Okay.
The LGBTQ argument where sexual fluidity is equated with racial biology. In other words, the LGBT community is claiming that they deserve the minority status that the African-American community has. And that doesn't make any sense to me, because biology isn't the same as sexual fluidity. Biology is stagnant. It does not change. Race does not change. But your sexual feelings may, and they are two different subjects and topics and directions, in my view. Comment.
Okay, now listen, I'm glad you asked me that question, because they are two totally different subject matters. And then, so for here, I'll refer to us, the African-American community, the AAC. We are different, because I hate to bring up the whole ugly truth about America's past, but it is relevant for what we're talking about. When you think about people being shipped from one place to another place in the country, and then that being part of a mass genocide, trust me when I say the word mass genocide. And of course, we're not the only ones that went through that, African-Americans coming to a new world. You know, we had Darfur, Bosnia, we had apartheid, Rwanda, and the Holocaust, and I'm pretty sure there's much, much more. I think the problem is coming when it comes to me is, because we have experienced mass genocide, and if people don't know what that word is, they can look that word up. I don't think you could compare what the African-American community has went through and gone through all of these years, like decades and even centuries, to establish themselves in America, and on some parts they're still fighting to be equal. I don't think you could compare the LGBT community, well, actually LGBTQ community, I don't think you could compare their struggle and their fight to what African-Americans have had to endure. Because when I wake up every morning and I leave my home, I can't leave anything at home. I walk out of my door as African-American with this beautiful skin color that God gave me. And when I step out of my door, everybody knows it. So if anybody has some issues with me, then they can make that an issue because they see it. Now, when it comes to sexual fluidity, those are things that I really don't know until you express your concerns to me and tell me that you are this or that. So my question is, a lot of times to people is, can you compare it? Now, I'm going to say this, then I'm going to pass it back to you. But I know, and it was an unfortunate event, in Florida, there was a mass shooting at a nightclub that was supposed to be an LGBT community nightclub, and that was the act of one lone person who decided to take up arms to say, I'm going to eradicate these people who act like this and same-sex attractions. But we haven't seen that at a mass genocide level.
All right. We're going to have to take a break here, Corey. I want to give us enough time to give out the phone number, because I want to take calls in the next segment. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Call in. You have a chance to talk about the issue of racial loyalty when it comes to politics, and you have the opportunity to talk about gender identity versus biological race. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll be right back after this commercial break. 866-372-7234.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay, and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
OneMillionDads.com is where men can learn and grow together as men of the cross. Close families and even national revival begin at home with strong fathers in the faith.
I really like how the website provides so many articles. They're all just dead on to help me as a father.
Go to the website, read the articles. You're not alone. OneMillionDads.com. Lead, or others will.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net. and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's 42 after the hour on March 16th, 2017. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. If you want to follow Tony Perkins on Twitter, it's T Perkins. That's T-P-E-R-K-I-N-S. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. Of course, the Family Research Council website is frc.org, and Oklahoma Wesleyan University's website is okwu.edu. Corey Taylor is with us. He's been helping us wrestle with the issue of racial loyalty as it relates to Republicans, Democrats, conservatives and liberals. And he's walked us through that a little bit. He also has touched on the issue of the conflation. I'll use the word conflation of the LGBTQ identity arguments with the biological fact of race and skin color. Corey, I would argue that when I get up, I'll use an analogy you started to use. When I get up in the morning, my skin is white and I can't change it, and I don't want to. When you get up in the morning, your skin is black, you can't change it, and you don't want to. Our identity has been created biologically. It's a fact. Our gender has been created biologically, physiologically, genetically. It's a fact. These things are immutable characteristics that are endowed to us by God as we are the imago Dei and representing His image. However, our appetites and our inclinations and those things that we want to do sexually or otherwise are not biologically obvious. And as you said, and I'll you put it in my language, not yours, I don't want to get you in trouble on this, but I don't know what your sexual appetites are unless you tell me. There's nothing in your physical presence that tells me, you know, what kind of sex you like and what your appetite is or what your inclinations or temptations are. And it's totally different than the color of your skin and your physiological genetic identity.
Yes. And here's the thing that I would like to say is that, first of all, let me digress real quick. I want all of the viewers to know that even though I brought up the genocide things about America, I think we have to move on from those things. So just people know that I love all my brothers and sisters, no matter what walk of life they is, white, black, Asian, or whatever. So I wanted to say that. But here's the thing. I know of a person who was married and now have, you know, over five children, and I'm trying to conceal who they are. And then they decided after marriage and five children, they decided that, you know, they wanted to be in a, you know, LGBTQ relationship. Now, the thing that got me when that happened, I was really, really confused about that, because after, you know, 5+ kids and that happened, I was wondering, like, how did you turn that corner? And so when I talked to that person, this is what they said to me, and they were a believer, near and dear to my heart. I used to sing with them in church and everything. And what they said to me was, I know that it's not right, but it's my choice. Hmm. And I want to say that because that person is near and dear to me, and I love them because they're connected as a family member. And I'm just trying to keep it concealed because people that know me would know who it is.
Sure.
But my thing is that when we would have talks and conversations about this, they always said it was a choice for them. Now, another thing is that I used to do ministry, and I used to minister to those who were in that culture. Of course, it didn't have that name back then, that acronym, but they all would say the same thing to me. So the thing that gets me is that when we talk about the LGBTQ community, the thing that Q stands for, from what I understand, is, you know, a questioning still. And so I think that is the thing that even us that are on the outside looking in are still trying to figure out. Where does the acronym, because it keeps expanding, where does it end? And then how do we make sense of stuff that is constantly changing, or how you put it, the sexual fluidity? How do we make sense out of it? Because at the end of the day, I'm African-American according to how people have given me that name, but at my skin color and my melon is dark, dark. And so because of that, I have had to deal with issues in the past of racial discrimination. And right. I still at this point don't know how we can still try to fit that into our culture when there is still so much hurt on that racial level that has to be healed first before we can move on to anything else. And I don't want that conversation to ever be overlooked, because we have to bring unity together among racial ethnicity groups, African-American, right. Caucasian, and Asian, and Hispanic. We have to reconcile that before we start getting into anything else when we're dealing with sexual fluidity and gender identity.
Okay, we've got a caller here. I'm going to summarize from my perspective here what I think I heard you saying, and I'm going to come close to a quote. Your friend told you that his sexual behavior, his sexual lifestyle, was a choice. Your race is not. My race is not, nor is your friend's race. Race is not a choice. It's a biological fact. Our sexual behavior is, by definition, a behavior. It's a behavior choice. It's not our being. Our being is given by God. It's dictated genetically. It's dictated in our physiological identity. Our behaviors can be chosen. We have a caller. It's Sid from Texas. Sid, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Piper, and thank you as well, Mr. Corey. So really, I just wanted to make a comment on your first question to Mr. Corey on how the black community is so partial to the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And just from growing up in a mixed family, my dad being white, my mom being black, and also being military at the same time. A lot of people like to think that the military community is just really rich, but what it comes down to is it's a job. It's a regular 9-to-5. Now, for me, growing up in that environment, our house was classed in a, how do you say, they favored the Democratic Party. So my whole life growing up, that's just what we were taught to vote for, what we were taught to, you know, support. But over my life, I've seen that the Democratic Party didn't share the same ideals that our house had. They didn't value life or things such as the human dignity in terms of, you know, this whole physician-assisted suicide and a lot of that. So we grew up thinking that that's who represents us. Later in life, and just with this recent election, I've made a decision to acknowledge my conservative values, and for my house, a lot of them did as well. So I thought that the black community found the Democratic Party in their favor simply because they were classed as either low income or, you know, impoverished areas. And that's why I think a lot of black people despise or even, you know, have a higher level of hatred towards a lot of Republicans or that sort of group, because they like to look at them as the fortunate ones or the ones who have what they don't. So I just feel like a lot of the conservative movement and the party, its term of the Republican Party, should actually start to voice their opinions more than the Democratic Party in the terms of less of what look at me and more of look at what I stand for. And I think that will actually help a lot of people change their perspective on why voting Republican is, in a lot of cases, voting for life and voting for a lot of Christian ideals.
Sid, incredibly well stated. Thank you so much for calling into Washington Watch. Corey, you want to respond to Sid?
Man, hey, congratulations, sir. And I'm so glad to hear you say that, because if more people start, you know, taking the onus of themselves to think like you're thinking and how I have been thinking, and that was the thing growing up in my house, same exact thing. You know, you're a Democrat. But I want to tell some people, you know, tell the listeners, there's a movie that African-Americans, if they are on the line of what to be or what they should be, there's a movie that's called Free State of Jones that I've recommended a lot of my friends go watch. And it takes you back to a time around the Civil War, and it really makes a distinction of what side, who was on and who was for what. And most people don't remember that the Democratic or the Southern people were more for keeping slavery intact, whereas the Republicans, representing more of the Northern, they wanted to free slaves. And so if people go watch Free State of Jones, I think it'll give them an interesting perspective on what we used to vote versus what we are voting now. So congratulations, sir. I'm so glad that you're, you know, aligning your values with what you're trying to represent as far as being conservative.
Corey, well, before I ask this question, I'm going to give out the phone number again in case we get any more callers here. Remember, it's 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We have about 6 minutes left in the program and probably time to take one or two additional callers. Corey, I just learned that we've got Jake in Kansas. I'm going to take him in a second, but I'm going to ask you this quick question, Corey. What mistake do white people make in communicating to the black community when it comes to politics?
Don't be dismissive. And when I say don't be dismissive, I was actually at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and that was the thing that I heard echoed the sentiments of a speaker that was there that happened to be Caucasian. He realized that so many times those who are in the conservative values movement have become dismissive and act as if African Americans are just crying. But he said, if you take time to listen to what they have to say, you will start seeing that their arguments are not so much different than what everybody else is wanting. But we have to take time to listen. And I'm saying we because I'm part of the conservative movement as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it was Jake in Kansas. Do I have that name right? Welcome to Washington Watch. AJ, I'm sorry. Forgive me for messing that up. AJ from Kansas. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. Hey, I just wanted to comment that, you know, in the Christian community, we miss the symptom as the platform that the party stand on. We think it's about the person, it's about the platform. And if the Democratic platform, independent platform, Republican, if they're against your moral Christian values, then you shouldn't vote for them. And it's just that simple. But we miss saying that in the church. We think it's about the person. It's about the platform of the party. That's all I want to comment on, sir.
Spot on. Thanks for the call. I'm going to respond quickly and then pass the baton to Corey. I spoke before the election. I said, in the United States, we don't vote for a king. We don't vote for the king. Presidents come and presidents go. We vote for the covenant, the Constitution. And as Ozginus taught me while I was studying in Oxford, covenants always lend themselves to freedom and hierarchies always bend toward power. And the platform, sir, perfect point, AJ, the platform of the Republican Party is more covenantal than it is hierarchical, and the Democratic platform, I would argue, by definition, is hierarchical, top-down as opposed to bottom-up. Corey, comments?
Man, I'm so glad to hear him say that because that, you know, the first time around when Obama got elected, some of my friends, they came to me, and when I told them what I was thinking about doing, they really came to me hard, and they made me open my eyes, and they said, you're going to abandon your Christian beliefs to follow somebody that doesn't align with your Christian values. And at that time, I took it offensive, but I know now today that it made so much sense. So it was a lesson learned that I do want to vote for people, just like Brother AJ said, people that align themselves with the values that I believe to the extent as much as possible.
Corey, I want you to be incredibly candid on this one, because I'm going to give you a chance to critique or criticize me personally. I'm going to set myself up as the stereotype of the working class white guy that came from a truck driver dad and a stay-at-home mom. Neither of them had a high school diploma. And I think I had a few challenges in my life, too. I was, quote-unquote, the blue-collar kid from the other side of the tracks, having to go up against the white-collar professional class in everything from basketball to academics and whatnot. Now, when I step into this political debate and this debate between blacks and whites, and I use that anecdote of my challenges and the fact that I was underprivileged, is that offensive for me to suggest that to an African-American friend as if my lot in life is similar to yours?
Very quick. I went to, in Coffeyville, Kansas, I used to live there. There was a time they brought a group in that was an anti-racism group. And the first thing that they did, they had an African-American woman and a Caucasian male speaking. They were both ministerial people. And when the African-American said something, the African-American lady would respond. When the Caucasian said something, the Caucasian man would respond. And they would not let people respond that were different cultures because they were setting us up. Because they said it's going to be up to those within the culture to start talking, to start bridging the gap. So with that being said, I think when you being right, because you did face those challenges coming from a social and low economic background, I think when you face those challenges, you are absolutely right. But I think it's when people hear it, they think in their mind, you can't possibly identify because their barrier and their way of thinking is you're a different skin color, you're white, so you have white privilege, and how can you identify? Now, trust me when I say this, and I'm going to say this real quick, and I'll be finished. My dad that raised me was actually mixed. I didn't know this until I became about 13 years old. His dad was Caucasian. That man lived with us in our house because, of course, my mom was African-American. I did not realize until I grew up that he was actually full-blooded Caucasian, and my mom told me. And I said, what was granddad? Was granddad albino or what? She said, boy, your granddaddy was white, and he lived with us, and he lived and did the same exact things we did. And I'll leave it at that.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Corey, I'm going to give you 30 seconds. The music is coming on. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to leave us with the final word. What do you want us to leave with?
Well, I'm big on reconciliation, and I believe that if each one would really reach out and reach one, if each one would reach one with the heart of reconciliation, we can heal this racial divide in America, and I'm definitely wanting to be one of the people on that in that conversation.
Thank you, Corey, for joining us this afternoon on Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. Again, thank you for joining us. Keep fighting the good fight, and remember that Christ is on your side, the Bible is true, and we know who wins at the end of the day.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.